Thursday morning tips once again into Thursday afternoon here on 90.7 FM, KALX, Berkeley University, and very importantly, listener-sponsored radio. It is time, as announced, for the program Arts and Review, here with you for the next half hour. My name is Gregory Sharpen.
And my name is Lisa Monhoff.
And we have sitting over there by the other microphone, Marcia Baron Taylor.
Barrow.
Barrow Taylor. I knew I was going to get one thing wrong about that.
It's all right.
Who has work up at an exhibition currently over at Root Division. Thank you so much for relinquishing your afternoon to come and talk with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk. You just mentioned before we came on mic that there's going to be a closing night exhibit coming up on August 10th, and you're going to be speaking, and there's a catalog. So why don't we go over the specifics of the exhibition and what you're liable to be doing on August 10th?
Well, it's the closing exhibition, and I am one of five artists that will be speaking about my work. It'll be a short talk, I'm sure. But the most exciting thing is that we'll be releasing a catalog. And so the catalog release will be a part of the closing exhibition, so I'm really excited about that.
How do you translate the three-dimensional work into a two-dimensional catalog?
Well, photographs.
Yes, I know.
Photographs.
But I'm just thinking, I mean, looking at I've seen the images of the work, and I'm thinking seeing them in a live context is a very, very different kind of animal.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And rarely does a two-dimensional image live up to the three-dimensional encounter.
In other words, go to the exhibit.
Yes. In other words, that was subtle, wasn't it?
So the exhibit also, it ends on August 10th, is that correct?
Or? It is the closing reception, and so that would be my guess.
I think it does. I think that's what
yeah,
it is
that would
well.
Be my guess.
And it's open, I think the gallery is open Wednesday through Saturdays, afternoons, right?
Okay.
In San Francisco.
Yes. Is it through Saturday or Sunday? I don't know. It could be Saturday, but it could also be Sunday, no?
Okay.
We should know this. Sorry, folks.
I can check it out before we end this conversation.
Okay.
But how many artists are represented in this exhibit? And can you say the name of the exhibit? I don't think we've
The exhibit is called Colorism, The Spectrum of Internalized Bias. And it's about 17, somewhere between 17 and 20, 21 artists. Yeah, at the opening reception, not all artists were present because it's a group of international as well as local artists, so not everyone was there.
Oh, okay.
When you were doing the series, was the series something that you had in mind before you were part of the exhibition, or did the concept of the exhibition point you in a certain direction?
Good question. Let me go back a bit. I have a son who was in high school at the time of that string of murders that took place, and it was really, really hard for me as a mom and for him as a young black man growing up in Lafayette, California, you can imagine. And I remember one day he came into my studio. He's a musician, and he often comes into my studio to rehearse. And I was working on a topography piece. Now, it's a pre-existing series, but typically I'd been doing them in shades of white and maybe some other pastel colors, some blues. And he came into my studio and he said, you know, Mom, you should really make a topography piece in a really dark color, like black or charcoal. And I turned to him and I said, Oliver, nobody is going to buy a black painting. People want happy colors. And I am doing air quotes right now. And he turned to me very serious and said, Mom, it doesn't matter. It would be a powerful gesture. And then he said, everybody loves Mozart, but Mahler was a freaking genius. And I thought, okay, I'm going to make a black topography. So I really spent a year. I thought, why make one? I'm going to make a cycle. And I spent a year really thinking about black as a color, as a metaphor, the color hierarchy. So to answer your question, Greg, this cycle called the Ode Cycle, obviously Ode to Black, already existed. And I didn't expect to sell it. I didn't even expect that it would be seen by a greater public. But then the call for this exhibition came in, and I thought, I gotta submit. Yeah, and they took one piece. They didn't have the room to take all four. I would have taken over the whole exhibition.
It's a fairly large piece.
Yeah, four by 5 foot, all vertical orientation. But it's a large piece in the exhibition, as you saw, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And most of the artists there have just one piece, except for maybe a few who have smaller pieces,
right.
I think.
Right.
Can you explain a little about the process of making topographies and the different ones? And maybe, I don't know if you had the brown paper bag test in mind when you were using the materials for it?
Or I did not.
Okay.
I did not. I actually used brown craft paper. I don't use brown paper bags per se, although maybe I should because that paper is thicker. I might have to take that up.
Materials.
Yeah, yeah. But I use brown craft paper, but I do have a process by which I paint the paper using acrylic paint, and then I treat the paper using acrylic mediums. So by the time I'm done and it's dry, it's pretty sturdy. But it is just paper. I mean, I am a fiber artist as well as a painter, and so I very much lean towards working with plant and animal fibers. So...
So does paper get, I guess, smooshed up or crinkled before you put it on the canvas? Or,
yes.
Okay.
So
I
paint the paper in large sheets, and then I literally rip it up. Mm-hmm. And then, so I deconstruct it, and then I reconstruct it onto the canvas, creating like a fabric mm-hmm. onto the canvas that I call topography.
And then there's a painting on the canvas as well that's sort of peeking through.
There is a back painting. Wow, you really did look at the work, didn't you? Yeah, I do begin with a painting on canvas. And as I'm creating the surface painting, which is the three-dimensional painting, there will be moments when the underpainting just speaks to me and says, don't cover me.
Yeah, I have to say, when I saw your work, I just loved the balance of it. There's a lot of pieces on the canvas, a lot of this textured paper pieces, but the balance with the canvas paintings peeking through, it really was great for me. And I liked what I read, I think, later, maybe on your website, about how if you stand back from your pieces, they look all black.
Right.
And then when you get closer, you start seeing the different tones.
Right.
And
right.
I was wondering if maybe you could speak a little about that.
Yeah. Well, no matter what color a topography is, you do have that experience where it registers as one color from a distance. Even if you can discern some slight indication of other colors, it'll still register as white or black or gray. And then as you approach it, there's a lot of layering that goes on when I'm actually painting the sheets. So as you approach it, those subtle layers begin to come through. And it's much more complex than how it registers from a distance. And that seems to be something that people really respond to, the fact that the painting changes as you approach.
And then, the angle you approach it. If you look at it from the side,
right,
like I was looking at some of the photos I took earlier from the side, and you see some of that brown and the white streaks underneath. And so I thought that was really great about it. It had that three-dimensional kind of context to it that
right.
you could get different views of it and different ideas of what
right.
it was.
Yeah. And you can imagine creating four of those in black really required a lot of thinking on my part so that each one would be different from the other. I mean, if you're back far enough, they might register as the same. I don't even think they do. But yeah. as you come close, when they're all four together, they really are very different from each other, and which is kind of funny because it's the whole thing of like no two black paintings are alike, no two black people are alike,
yeah.
no people are alike. I mean, you could just keep going and going and going with that. So,
yeah. From a distance, maybe we all look alike.
Right,
and
right.
The closer you get, the more depth you get into somebody's
right.
character and their and seeing them, you see
right.
different things.
And the more intimate, the more intimate we are with one another, the more we can reveal. Yeah.
Have you been able to exhibit all four of them
no.
together?
Well, I in my studio.
Yeah.
And I had a show at my studio, and they were exhibited as a foursome. But the walls in my studio weren't long enough, so it was more like you were enveloped by them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's
cool.
Kind of cool, too, right? It's kind of like Rothko's chapel.
A little chamber made out of paintings.
Exactly. And imagine a black chamber.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's they're pretty powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think you underestimated. Yeah, who might buy a black painting? I think
I have sold two black paintings, but not from that particular cycle. In fact, the first two black paintings I made were not from that cycle. That cycle came afterwards. So there's topography, I believe, 13 and Topography 12. And then one of them, I can't remember which, has a subtitle of Mahler. And actually that one I'm saving for my son. He can't afford to buy it right now, but yeah. I'm saving that one for him, but the other one sold.
Yeah.
I wonder if we could just maybe riff a little bit on the word topography, because it's, I mean, if you look at something like this, you could apply any kind of a name to it. It's a sculpture, it's a this, but the word topography kind of frames a little bit how you interpret what it is that you're looking at, and the idea of a landscape, and the idea almost like of an aerial view.
Right.
So talk about that word and how that word, how you came upon that word or decided upon that word for these kinds of works.
The series has been going on now for, I'd say 5 years, maybe more. And so when I first made the very first topography, it was a smaller scale. I had been doing some collage work, and I came into my studio after being absent for a few weeks. And I walked into the studio determined not to buy any new materials, that I was going to figure out a way to make something with what was in the studio, just as a way to kind of get back into it, to get warmed up. And I walked in, and there were all these pieces of paper on my studio floor. And I thought, So I just had this idea that I would take an old painting and I would take these pieces of paper, because they were really beautiful, because they were all, you know, various colors, and they were left over from other work. So seeing them all there after not being in the studio, I perceived them with fresh eyes, and it was just really beautiful. So I just slowly started just sculpting with them on top of a painting. That was an old painting. It wasn't made for this purpose. And because it was a smaller scale, I was able to just finish it in a day. And it was just really, really beautiful. And I thought, oh, my God, this is so cool. It's like, and it reminded me of like those assignments we did in science class. Remember in elementary school where you had to do the map? You remember when you had to do like
paper mache, maybe?
Yeah, and you had to like make a map, and it had that kind of, well, it felt like that in terms of my fingers, but it was so much more beautiful. And I just, the first thought that came to my mind was topography, because of the 3D element of it. And you know, I took it off the wall, I laid it flat, I put it back on the wall, and I just thought, this is like so topography. That was just
like a bunch of little mountains.
Right. And of course, now that the series has matured, I mean, if I were to name it now with how it is now and on its large scale, maybe I wouldn't call it topography. But it is known as it's a word that sort of resonates. I don't know. It's a good, delicious word. Topography.
Yeah, it has a lot of depths in that word. As
it falls off. It is really fun to say. Yeah. So.
I mean, there's a little bit of a resonance to my eye with something like J. DeFeo's The Rose, where you have this kind of this very three-dimensional, ostensibly a painting, but it isn't really a painting.
Interesting.
And
thank you for that, because that's a very, very famous piece and a beautiful piece. But yeah, I've never thought of that. And it's white, isn't it?
It's black, gray, and white. It's sort of a gradation. I remember running across The Rose at the old Berkeley Art Museum, and it was hanging in one of the upper galleries, and it was one of the few moments where I came around the corner and saw it, and I literally stopped dead for around 5 minutes staring at this thing.
Wow.
Because of the scale and because of the three-dimensionality and the intensity of it. So there's sort of, you know, the idea of a three-dimensional piece that has this kind of scale to it. It seems like there's a resonance to it.
Yeah. I've never seen it live. I've only seen images, and it's been a long time since I've seen an image. But I do know that even the image, the 2D image, was arresting. Yeah, I'm going to go back and look at it after our interview for sure. And I would like to increase my scale. The largest I've done is a 5x6, right? Or is it 4x5? I'd like to go to 5x6. In fact, I think it would be really cool to do a wall to even come off the canvas and just an installation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's next.
Who knows?
And I was looking at your website, and it looks like you've done fiber arts, like you mentioned.
Yes.
Painting. Can you list some of the other, I think, interdisciplinary activities?
Yeah, so in the last 3 years, I have really branched out. I collaborated with an organization called Art Moves Project. They wanted to work with me as the visual artist on a public art piece that incorporated dance. And at that time, I was just the painter, the artist, but they convinced me to do a performance piece that included me creating a paper dress. And if you go to my Facebook page, MBT Fine Arts, there's a video excerpt from that performance. But that changed everything. I mean, once I allowed myself to step out of my comfort zone and participate in a performance piece, which included the paper dress and a fiber installation, I mean, it's just been the whole world has just changed. I'm just, my visual language is opened up, and I just feel like there's, I can do whatever, you know. It's like, I don't have to just stick to one medium. I consider myself an interdisciplinary artist, and I'm excited about exploring new materials, but you have to rein it in, right? You can't just go crazy. You kind of have to know what your intentions are and what it is you're trying to say. And so,
yeah, there's a balance. You have to know when to use certain things.
Right.
So I think you listed poetry, calligraphy, dance.
Well, the dance is something I do not dance. I mean, I do dance, but I don't dance as a form of my art practice. But, but I have this character that I have created over the years, that I call Whisperer, and she is the subject of my portraits. And she's sort of born out of a West African or an African tradition of the Yoruba, and it's called the Orisha. It's like an ancestral spirit. But I created my own, and I call her Whisper because she's a maker. She comes out of a cotton field, and because cotton is a medium that I work with as a fiber artist. Right, but the cotton went from medium to motif, because I also paint portraits of cotton, then to metaphor. And so cotton is a very powerful icon in my visual language, but not just as an icon or it is an icon, but not just as a motif. I also go deeper and deal with cotton and what it represents for my identity and the identity of African American people, and even people of, I would say, even of the African diaspora. So, yeah. So there's cotton, there's the Whisperer. She comes with cotton around her, and, you know. Did you see those images on the website?
I did. I looked at them briefly, but yeah, I want to go back now and look at them. And
So the poetry and the calligraphy is incorporated because the calligraphy was the way, you know, people wrote in the 19th century, and my Orisha comes from the past, but also is present. So it's, I'm playing with time, and I'm playing with identity and materials.
Telling stories.
And definitely telling stories. I have, my intention is to heal, to change the past through art, not literally, obviously, but to change our perceptions of ourselves through a reexamination of the past.
Well, that is something that is a current discussion, let's say, to use a polite term, about how much the past informs the present, and people who say that was in the past, it doesn't actually have any bearing on us anymore. We're here right now, and then the counter argument is actually the past is very much with us in very many ways and informs a lot more than I think some people would like to think.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you can get really philosophical and even metaphysical about the distinction between past and present. I, in my work, really try to collapse time. Knitting is a big part of my practice. And when I'm knitting, I lose track of time. And I feel that time bends. And so I don't really make that much of a distinction between past and present, not in my practice. I really feel like we carry memory within us. I feel like my hands have memory. A lot of the things that I do with my hands, no one's ever taught me. I just know how to do them because I have a yearning to do them. So I believe that there's this connection between
this continuity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I, you know, instead of a straight line, maybe it's a circle. Yeah.
I think having that vision helps that you were explaining a couple minutes ago, and just sort of working towards that without thinking about time and maybe even an end goal, but just trying to get that vision down and your creativity and your intent onto canvas or paper or fiber. It happens, like you said, without even knowing how it might happen.
It's about process.
It's about the process and not the product. And that's why.
Well, unfortunately, speaking of time and the malleability of time.
Oh, yes, there are clocks, actually, reminding us.
Before we get too much further, we should mention the specifics once again about the show and about it is closing on the 10th. There is going to be a closing night.
Yes. Please join us.
And it is open Wednesday. The gallery is Wednesday through Saturday. I just checked.
Okay, great, great.
I think it's 2 to 6 p.m., but.
Okay.
Maybe you can name it's the website rootdivision.org.
Yes. And this is my first project with Root Division, so yeah. So.
And for people who are interested in finding your work, your website, how do people get in contact with you?
mbtfinearts.com. And MBT is Marcia Barrow Taylor, and I also have a Facebook page. I'm not on Instagram. Sorry, guys. I know there's a lot of pressure to get on Instagram, but I just...
Resist.
Yeah, resist. Exactly. With all caps. So, and if you go to my Facebook page and or website, there's a number. You can get in contact with me. And I have a studio here. No, we're in Berkeley. I have a studio in the city. So...
And do you have a sense of what it is that you're going to talk about on the 10th?
I think I'll probably focus on the topography series, since that's the one piece that's in the show, and talk about how colorism and the color hierarchy and my exploration of black and how that relates to the exhibition. I don't think the curator would want me to go too far off topic. So,
One note about the curator. I can't remember his name.
Daryl. It's a woman.
Oh, Daryl. Okay.
Yeah.
I think there were initials, I think, in the...
Yeah,
in
Wells.
The, yeah. And I thought the statements around the gallery were really well written.
I thought so, too.
Yeah.
I thought so, too.
Very, you know, sometimes... Those things are hard to read when you want to look at the art, but I thought they were so powerful.
Oh, they're really poignant. And
really helped to, just to bring, because when you have also an exhibit of many artists, what, 20 different artists, I think, it's kind of, you know, you need that to bring it together, I think. And
she was very, she lives in England, and she, when she pitched this to Root Division, I think she was living in the Bay Area, but she has since moved to England. So she was curating the show from abroad.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really ambitious. She did an amazing job, but she was very fastidious about making sure that the work pertained to her topic. Mm-hmm. I mean, she really, and we, each of us, at least I know I, had to write about how my work related to this topic. And so she was really focused. Yeah.
Maybe one final question, just talking about the exhibition as a whole. As you working as an individual artist, you're working on your own pieces, and then when you see it in the context of a whole group of other different kinds of art and other different artists, what is that experience like in terms of, like, I hadn't considered this concept, or, I mean, how does it, does it make you look at your own work in a different way, or does it, I mean...
I was really nervous about that, because... I'm going to be really honest. I'm a bit of a prima donna. I've only done solo shows, you know, because I represent myself. And so I usually curate my own shows and I'm showing my work. And it's the first time that I would, actually, that's not true. It's not the first time. I was in a show once prior at the Bedford, but that was very different. But this is the first time that I submitted a piece and really said, okay, you're going to put this up with other artists, not really having any impact on the quality of what the other work was going to look like. Anyway, I was very, very pleased. I thought Root Division and Daryl did a fantastic job. My piece, I think, really gets to speak. Mm-hmm. And it was only one, and so I wasn't sure about that. But I thought it was a beautiful exhibition and meaningful. Mm-hmm. You know, a great jumping-off point for some necessary conversations. And exactly. I'm just excited to be able to make work that is socially relevant and that can be used as a vehicle for social activism and for dynamic conversations around social activism. I mean, I'm just thrilled. Yeah.
Well, on that note, we have been talking with Marcia Barrow Taylor. Thank you so much for coming and talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.